have got special guest preacher. We have got Astrid Staley is going to be coming up and ministering the word. And Astrid is, it's been such a blessing having Martin and Astrid with us for about the last, 2 years now? For about the last 2 years. You don't see much of Martin on Sunday mornings because he works, but he's here every Sunday night and he's doing a Martin is an evangelist and just fantastic. Astrid this year has been an absolute blessing to us because she's really come on board in a big way. She's just become an Assemblies of God minister, and she's a lecturer at Harvest Bible College. So she's very, very busy doing lecturing as well as managing a gym equipment store. So she's quite a busy lady. But she's been a great blessing. She's been heading up our ladies' ministry, doing a great job for that, organizing things like your Passover dinners and things. And but Astrid is very much a word person. She studied many years, through Bible College, and now she's a Bible College lecturer herself. And Astrid, you've been such a blessing being on board. Tonight you're going to be preaching the word. We know we're going to enjoy it. And so let's really get behind Astrid tonight. Give her a great welcome.
I feel like I've been here all weekend, and I have, but we had a great time last night. It was awesome. It's very bright, isn't it? So we had an awesome night last night, so I feel like we should have stayed over and just had a sleepover. It was fantastic. So I'm going to touch on some Jewish things again today. I hadn't planned to, and then 2 weeks ago when God gave me this message, when Pastor asked me to preach, the message came to me via pictures of my journey through Israel. And we know that a picture paints 1,000 words. Well, this was one of those instances. And since God gave me that message, everybody's been preaching it since then. And I said to Martin, what's going on with that? And he goes, well, it's that we've all got one author. And I thought, well, that's odd, because I thought I was his special one and he only gave me the word. And then, of course, this morning, Justin got up and just smashed it this morning. It was awesome. It was a great message. And that was my message as well. So, got in first, though. But it was an awesome message. And I think, and I really do believe, that we're in a season. God has called us to a season to become victorious, passionate, and devoted people of God. But in order to do so, we have to break out of the mindset of this world that it happens overnight. It's a journey that we're on. And it doesn't happen overnight. And therefore, because it doesn't happen overnight, people grow tired. And they decide for themselves that perhaps I've got a better way of doing it. Perhaps I can do it my way, because God's way just seems to be taking such a long time and it requires a bit of effort. And we live in an instant society that we, at a click of a switch and a button, we can be connected anywhere in the world at any time and get any information that we want and speak to anybody that we want. There are no delays. We can go and get fast food. And we sometimes think that our spirituality should be like fast food as well. Unfortunately, God doesn't kind of agree with that. He's kind of got his own ideas about things. And it's amazing how from the seat to up here, you've got no spit left. So excuse me. So I really do believe God is calling us to a season of greater depth. The messages from the Word over the last, especially since January, have really been along that line, to come deeper with Him. Why? Because God is training us. We don't know what's ahead. None of us know what tomorrow will bring. All we know that there is only one sure thing, and that His name is Jesus. We only know one sure thing, that God will always be on His throne, and His Holy Spirit will see us through whatever it is that comes across our way. However, there's always a however, isn't there? There's always a but or a however. We are never alone, but God asks us to come into the deep with Him, to be challenged. The Word of God is such an inspiring word. I love it. I teach it constantly, and I'm always in the Word, and I'm always surprised by the Word. Every time I go up, I teach an Old Testament and New Testament survey. So basically, I go through the Bible every year. And every year, I'm surprised. Every year, I'm challenged. I never preach the same word twice because God always gives you a new word. You can't live on yesterday's word. If you live on yesterday's word, you're going to miss out something for tomorrow. And so we're called into this deeper relationship with God and this deeper time with God and all the messages that have been coming off the platform lately, and I love it because that's my passion as well. See, the world around us is collapsing. It's absolutely collapsing. So where are we going to put our trust? There is only one place to put our trust. But we get it a little confused and we get it a little wrong, and sometimes we think we know better and there are better ways of doing things and we'll do it our way. And the word I becomes a constant in our language instead of less of me and more of you. And that's what God calls us to. Less of us and more of Him. And that's my passion. That is my desire. That's the vision of this church. That's the DNA of this church, to come deeper with God, to have more of Him and less of us. That's the DNA of this church. The journaling at the beginning of the year really started that rolling, and I knew we were onto something. Because if we don't know the voice of God with all the other voices that are vying for our attention in this world, how can we possibly live victorious, devoted, and passionate lives for God? It's not possible, because how do we work out the difference between our voice and God's voice? And that's a journey that we all go on, learning the difference between our voice and God's voice, relinquishing our will to take up His will. So today, I'm going to go along that same line of thought as Justin this morning, because I believe that God is calling us deeper, to walk deeper with Him, to come out of the shallows and to walk deeper with Him, to come off the edge from dangling our toes in the water and come deeper with Him. And so he brought me to this message. It was the night that Pastor asked me to preach, and I said, oh, okay. And when I got home that night, God just started speaking to me about Israel and where I had been. And just two places, there was no real major, you know, it just came to me, and I thought, well, okay, so I'll have a look at these pictures. And sure enough, they just started speaking to me. Anyway, I couldn't sleep that night. About 1 o'clock in the morning, I said, Martin, I'm not going to preach this message. I'm not going to preach. I've got no time. You don't understand. I'm just too busy. I've got the Passover event. I've got this. I've got that. I've got a paper due. It's my last paper. I've got to get out of this master's course. I've got to move on from that. And I said, I'm not going to preach. I'll ring Pastor in the morning and tell him I won't preach. Well, I didn't really sleep much that night. So, of course, I felt sorry for Martin, so I had to get up and I went out to the lounge. And, of course, I still couldn't sleep. And God just went bang, 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 bang. Yeah. That's it. And that was that night. So at about 4 o'clock in the morning, I went to sleep and got up at 7. So I was feeling mighty good, but I was as high as a kite. I mean, I was on a roll. I was so excited. And, of course, since then, it's been like everywhere I've heard this message being preached. I thought, wow, maybe I should change my message because everyone's preaching it. And then I thought to myself, well, the law of repetition with God is this. When He keeps harping on something, that means that it's His heart and He wants us to get it. He doesn't want us to forget it. And being finite creatures that we are, and some of us with an extremely short attention span, we tend to forget very quickly. Apparently there were characters in the Bible that did the same. They were called the Israelites. So they had the same problem as we do. And they were thirsty as well. So that's where I want to go tonight. And I'm going to take you on this journey, a visual journey of the heart of God and what He wants from us in our relationship with Him and where He wants to take us. So the first place I want to take you is to Mount Nebo. And I feel really lost at the moment because I'm used to controlling my PowerPoints. So I've got to remember there's somebody up there I've got to keep in queue with me. Anyway, I'm going to tell you the story behind these PowerPoints. And the story that God kind of gave me as we go through this message today, and God's heart that He wants us to come into the deep with Him and draw closer to Him, because we don't know what is tomorrow, and so therefore we need to prepare today. And that's what He wants to do. He wants to prepare us today. So that's my heart to bring today. And God's word is not going to only just inspire us, but it's going to challenge us. And that's what I love about God. You know, we're going to spend an eternity with God and we are never going to be bored, ever. We'll spend the first 1,000 years just going, and I'll be standing there in the corner prying all the gemstones off His throne. So here, this first place that I want to take you to is Mount Nebo. This is where Moses finished his ministry. He began his ministry on a mountain and he finishes his ministry on a mountain. This is the view from Mount Nebo, but it's not so much the view that I'm interested in. It was actually this young lad. He's about 18 years old, maybe even a little bit younger, and he's out there in the desert heat. And it was 40 plus at least. It was dusty, it was breezy, and it was just one of those really hot days that you get over in Amman. So here's this guy, and you may not be able to see very clearly, but he's actually pushing a wheelbarrow. And all it is a little platform that he just lops on these huge stones. See those huge boulders in the front? This guy is shifting them by himself. What you don't see in the picture is on the right here is an archaeological dig. And on the left here is a pile of stones, and he's working his way methodically, one by one, lifting these all by himself with absolutely no one to help him. And I felt really sorry for him because it was so hot, it was so dusty, he was all alone, and he was just in the heat of the day doing all this work by himself. So I felt really sorry for him. But, you know, he just plugged away. It was 40 degrees, hot, dry, dusty. And that was his day, and that was what he was doing. The next point, the next place that I'm going to take you to is En Gedi. We know En Gedi for the famous story of Saul and David, how David hid out in the caves of En Gedi and so forth, so I'm not going to reiterate that. But up here you'll see caves where you can go into. Now, it's a long walk in there, but what's interesting about it is it's absolute barrenness. And you walk in there and there's nothing very exciting until you get to this next place. And you come to this beautiful oasis of water. And what you see there is this beautiful waterfall and all the greenery and the lush stuff that is growing around it, because where there's water, there's life. And so wherever there's water, you'll find people, because that's where there's life. And so this was a beautiful place, and it was just so refreshing to come there because it was about 40 degrees and we were really sort of feeling the heat. Everybody was really, really tired. So the next place we come to is I find myself sitting in the water. We come along to this path and there it is. It's just absolutely beautiful. And I decide to plonk myself in there. I just wanted to get out of the heat. I wanted to get some sort of relief because it was just so hot. Now, so I went in there, jeans, runners, top, that was it. I just walked straight in. And everyone's going, oh, she's walked in with her clothes. What is she doing, you know? And I just said, well, I just want some refreshment. I just want some relief from the weather. The next slide we see is everybody sitting around the edges. I'm still in there. I'm having a good time. I'm relaxed. But around the edges are all these people sitting. They're just dangling their feet. They're not wanting to come in because they're really concerned about how they're going to look after they're all wet, because no one brought bathers. Nobody had any bathers because we were totally unprepared for what we were about to see and where we were about to go. So we weren't prepared, but everyone had shorts and, you know, some of the guys had boardies and they still didn't want to go in because they were a bit worried about being uncomfortable for the rest of the day, which was a little bit weird to me considering it was so hot. So some of the conversations that went on were a little bit like this. There's about 30 students there that you don't see. Oh, do you want to go in? Oh, no. I don't know. What do you think? Oh, no, it's a bit wet. You know, water usually is. Well, I just don't know. I mean, you know, we've got to walk the rest of the day. I'm going to be really uncomfortable. What do you think? Oh, Astrid's in there. Do you think we should? Yeah, but she's got all the clothes on. That's a bit weird, isn't it? Yeah, I know. Well, this guy up the top there, I don't know if you can see him up the top. I mean, he was just so hot and so tired. We were all so hot and so incredibly tired. But everyone was more concerned about how they were going to look and how comfortable they were going to be for the rest of the day than the fact that there was this incredibly cool spring of water there that they could have just jumped in. But they didn't. But then we had this guy, he decides to come in. And he thinks to himself, oh, this is all right. So we started, and we're calling people in. I'm saying, come on, don't worry about what everyone's going to think. Don't worry about how you're going to look. Well, it wasn't before long before one guy decides to really jump into the end. And so he jumps in. There he is. And he is just like, once he came in, everyone started coming in. And they were just, but it was in the deep that everybody had the best time. Because it was there that they were climbing up the walls and bombing into the water and having just the best time. We were having fun in the shallows, but not as much as when you got into the deep. That's where it was refreshing. That's where we could dive down to the bottom and explore the bottom. It was actually just a beautiful, cool spring. We got under the waterfall, and basically that's what it was like. All those people there were the same people that were standing on the edge, a little worried about how they're going to look and what their peers thought about them, and whether they were going to be uncomfortable for the rest of the day. So here were these guys, and that was basically how we were. Well, the whole mood of the place changed afterwards. Everyone was really excited. They were all relaxed. We were all cool. And so we had a really good time. So that was that. We were all wet for the rest of the day. We were all really uncomfortable for the rest of the day. But we had a really nice time. Psalms 91 is the psalms that I want to talk to you about today. Psalms 91 is, if we can have the next slide, is a psalm that's probably one of the most talked about psalms. Most of us can recite it without any problem. And it's a psalm that talks about the dangers that are around those and encamped around those who are God's people. And the fact that all the dangers that are surrounding God's people have no effect on those who put their trust in God. That's the heart of the psalm. And so people read it, write about it, recite it, and it is a beautiful psalm. And as I was reading this psalm, I thought to myself, this is a really good psalm. And then I read verse 14, you get one of those buts and because and therefores. So that's where you've got to pay attention. See, it's really nice up to one part. See, it tells us that, you know, God's going to do this for us. You know, he's going to deliver us. He's going to cover us with his wings. We will have refuge. He will be our shield. Nothing bad will happen to us. All these wonderful things for those whose refuge is in him. He will give his angels charge over us. And all these amazing promises that he gives us. And then we get to verse 14. So we're going to read verse 14. So all these things are going on, and he says, because he has set his love upon me, that's because you and I have set our love upon him, therefore, because we've set our love upon him, I will deliver him, or you. And me. And he says, I will set him on high because he has known my name. So I will set him on high and I will deliver him. Why? Because we have set our hearts upon him. Yeah? And because we have known him. So we've set our hearts upon him and we've known him. Now in the Hebrew word for know is yada. Which means, for all us Hebrew scholars who were here last night and now speak fluent Hebrew, thanks to Lawrence, means intimacy. One of the meanings of it is intimacy. The kind of intimacy that it talks about in Genesis chapter 4, where Adam knew Eve, and out of that intimacy, something was birthed. As what is true in the natural is also true in the spiritual. And so knowing is more than just, I know your name. It's being intimate, being close, being as one with someone. It's not just a passing knowing, it's an intimacy. Where out of that coming together, something is birthed. And this is what's really exciting about this passage, because it's saying, because you've set your heart upon me, you and I, we know each other, we're intimate to each other, with each other, and we are in the deep together. And because of that, because we're in the deep together, because you've set your heart upon me, I will deliver you and I will put you on high. And we get it the other way around, think, oh, I'll work it all out myself and I'll elevate myself. And God's saying, no, I want you to know me, set your heart upon me, and I will deliver you, and I will set you upon high. And one of the examples that I want to look at tonight is the life of Moses. Moses is an amazing man. In Exodus 33, verse 17, it says that I know you by name, God says to Moses. Moses is asking God to be his deliverer, to be the one that walks with him. And God says to him, I know you by name. In other words, I've chosen you. I've chosen you out and I know you. I'm going to labor this know because this is part of coming into the deep. Knowing is something that requires time and effort to know something. Nobody learns anything overnight. We would all love to do the Matrix and we all have instant knowledge and instant everything, but it doesn't work that way. Knowing takes time, knowing takes effort. But God says to Moses, I have known you by name. I have selected you. I have chosen you. I've had my eye on you, and so I want to know you. And then Moses, in the next verse, very casually says, oh, well, I'm on a pretty good thing here, so show me your glory. So, okay, because I've known you, I am going with you and I'm going to deliver you. So Moses thinks, well, I'm in the good books here, so now show me your glory. Not just anything, show me your glory. Take me deeper with you. Show me something that nobody else has seen. Show me something great. Show me your glory. And God doesn't say, well, I don't know, you know, you just haven't really been a good boy lately. He says, yes, I know you, not a problem. Just like that. Because you've asked, I'm just going to give it to you. Because I know you, you and I are in relationship with one another, and so I want to give this to you. Doesn't bat an eyelid. There's no, well, no, there's a five things you've got to do before you can, five steps. I know you, you know me. So he says, come away with me again. And he passed before him, covered him in the rock. We know how that goes. But he did more than that. He gave him revelation of who he was. Now, in the next verse, which is not on the PowerPoint, 5-7, he talks about what the Jews call the 13 attributes of God. And what it is, he gives God, he gives Moses not just the physical glance, but he gives him revelation. Merciful. He says, I am merciful. I am gracious. I'm long-suffering. I abound in goodness. I am truth. I am the creator. I am the master. I am the preserver. I'm the one who cleanses. I am slow to anger. This is who I am. I'm giving you a revelation, not just of my glory, but of who I am. I'm compassionate. I am forgiving. And I'm the one that makes atonement. So Moses has this most incredible journey with God because he knows him. He's come away with him and God has shown him his glory, but has also proclaimed to him who he was. That's revelation. You get that when you get in God's presence and you spend time with him. You can't live off someone else's preaching. Preaching is great. Listening to good preachers is great. But you've got to have your own word from God. You've got to get in and get quiet with God and just spend time with him. That's why this journaling has been such a great tool for us to come into the deep with God. Because every day we have the opportunity to get a fresh word from him. Now, I confess to you, I've not been the most brilliant of journalers. I've got an attention span of a gnat. So first thing in the morning, it's really hard for me to journal. But I've just found that the times that I have journaled, God has just spoken to me. And I've just thought, wow, that's amazing. And I've read the passage 100 times. But just that one time, he changes it for me and gives me a word that I need for that day to pull me through on that day. That's coming into the deep with God. But I want to hover here for a minute. I want to think about the events that led up to this. Moses had been gone for 40 days. And so Aaron is left in charge. Aaron is the leader. So Aaron's in charge. Now, Aaron's not a novice leader. He'd been beside Moses before Pharaoh. And so he was a man who saw and spoke for God into the life of a Pharaoh. So this was a pretty amazing position that he's held. So he's now left in charge. And the people are thinking to themselves, well, Moses has been gone for a week. Another week goes by, well, he's gone, been gone for 2 weeks. You know, maybe he's been zapped by the glory of God or something. Where is he? So they're starting to get a little bit restless. And they say to Moses, well, we want you to make a calf for us, a god for us that we can see and worship, because that's what we're used to. Did I say Moses? You know I meant Aaron, didn't you? You could have said, it's Aaron, woman, speak it. Too late. Anyway, so Aaron decides to himself, well, you know, I just want to keep the peace. Doesn't seem like such a bad thing. So we'll just get up all the jewelry, all the gold, and we'll just throw it into the furnace and see what comes up. Apparently just a calf just jumped out. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing passage. Well, it just came up, you know. It's amazing. The leader who should have been leading became the follower. The leader who should have stood up and said, no, we're not worshipping idols or images. We're going to wait. We're going to wait on Moses and see what happens when he comes down. The leader, in his pursuit of peace, compromised. Sometimes the pursuit of peace will lead us to compromise, because we want to stay in good relations with people who perhaps are not friendly to the gospel or friendly to the word, whether they're family or outside of the family. It really doesn't matter. But the fact that we don't stand up and become who God has called us to be, and that is the leaders wherever we are, wherever our feet touch the ground, we end up compromising. We know the story that it ended up in a drunken debauchery, and the anger of God just blazed in the place because the lead, and he held it against him in 33 verse 25. He said that Aaron had not restrained him and it was held against him. He was the leader. He should have known better. And he didn't. The price for compromise was very high. See, you and I are leaders in our community. We don't need to have gone to Bible college to be a leader in our community. We don't need to have a degree of any sort to be a leader and a minister in our community. We do not have to have a degree as a pastor or a certificate as a pastor to be a minister in our community. The very fact that we call ourselves Christians makes us ministers of God before the people. And our deciding to choose the road of peace can sometimes lead to compromise. Greater impact would it have been if Aaron had turned around and said, no, that's not going to happen. We'll just wait. Here's a good idea. Let me seek the Lord. Just as a side, as a last resort, let's just seek the Lord. Imagine if he had have done that. 3,000 people might have still been alive. So Aaron failed in his responsibility. You and I are called to stand out. To stand up and to stand out. As Christian ministers, that is our calling. We might be the only Bible that anyone will ever read. And we don't need to hold a degree or to hold a minister's credential to be that minister in that community. To be the minister to our youth, in our schools, to be the minister in our workplaces, to be the minister wherever our foot touches the ground, in the supermarket, wherever it is. But if we're in the deep and we're listening to God, then we will be ready in all seasons whenever the situation comes up. But if we're not, we're going to be like Aaron, and we'll want to keep the peace because we don't want to upset the equilibrium. Everybody wants to be light. We all do. But my Bible tells me Jesus wasn't too popular either. And nor did he try or strain for popularity. If they didn't like him, it was like, oh, well, that's just the way it is. If they don't listen to you, brush off your feet and just keep moving. But don't compromise. There was no room for compromise. Aaron compromised. He thought it'd be okay to be synchronistic. Synchronism doesn't work. It is one way or the other. We can't straddle the fence. We can't have our toes dangling in the water, worried about what other people are going to think. I found last night when we were talking about the symbolism in the Jewish feast absolutely fascinating. Because God speaks to us through symbols. And sometimes some of the things that the Jewish people do are just so rich in symbolism. And I was reading one of these books that I have, Sitting at the Feet of Rabbi Jesus, and how the Jewishness of Jesus can transform your faith. And I have a prayer shawl from Israel when I was there. And you'll notice that on the bottom, because we wonder why they do the things they do. We wonder why they dress the way they dress. We wonder what makes them tick. Well, I'll tell you what makes them tick. Well, one of the aspects. Here, and I'm not wearing it exactly how they should, but here you'll see the tassels. Yes? Anyone see them? Now, I'm going to read you something so you don't think it's just I'm making it up. You don't want me to make it up. They call the tzitzits. Do you believe me? That's my Aussie Hebrew. In Numbers, chapter 15, verse 38 and 39, it's not on the PowerPoint, it's just letting the guy know, just keeping that communication happening. Throughout the generations to come, you are to make tassels on the corner of your garments with a blue cord on each tassel, and you have these tassels to look at so that you will remember all the commands of the Lord. God loves giving us visual aids. He loves it because we're visual people. But the interesting thing about this particular object that they wear, and if you go to Jerusalem today, even if you go to Caulfield today, you'll see them wear these tassels hanging out from their garments. Why do they wear them? I thought it was always, I've always wondered, why are you wearing that? Why are you always wearing these little things that are dangling out the side of your pants and everything? You look untidy. Don't they? Looks untidy, doesn't it? I like to be tucked in. Anyway. So the cutting, we know that the tassels of the garment would often symbolise the rank, whether it was a king or a priest or so forth. The Bible in the Old Testament talks about the tassels of the high priest had a pomegranate and a bell, and that was identified them. But here we go. He says this, that this particular tzitzit was not restricted to Israel's leaders, whether they were king, rabbis or scholars. In fact, all Jews wore them. They were the uniform of Israel. The uniform of Israel. Why would God want them to make a uniform? Why would God want them to all look the same? Well, this point was really interesting. It said the tzitzit showed that God had chosen to make this one people his representatives, a kingdom of priests to the rest of the world. By wearing the tzitzit, every Jew was reminded of the obligation to serve God by obeying his commands. The pattern of knotting developed after Jesus' time. But then and now, the tassels were to remind the Jewish people to continually obey God's laws himself, of God himself, because he had put Israel on display as a light to the nations. Listen to this there. God was encouraging his people to be obvious about their commitment. In a world where the nations prostituted themselves to idols and sacrifices, their children to demons, the Jews stood out. The tzitzit became a visible reminder that they could not blend into the nations about them because they belonged to God in a special way. That whenever they did good or whenever they did evil, it was a witness to the God they served. If they fulfilled their calling through obedience, the world would recognize them as a holy nation. This is the understanding here, the Jewish understanding of this particular garment and the tassels that hang on the end. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because God has called us out of this world to be of the world, to be in the world, but not of the world. We are to be a light to the world so that people, when they see us, will give glory to God and be drawn near to God. Now, we don't wear tassels, but we do have something like this. I'll grab that clip if you can. So we don't have tassels, but we got something incredibly powerful. God calls us to be set apart, to be different. In Deuteronomy 34, verse 10, it says, "But since then there has not arisen a prophet like in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, whom the Lord gave revelation to, whom the God communicated the Torah to, such great exploits," it goes on to mention, "that he did because of his knowing God, because of his being intimate with God." That's what is birthed when we get intimate with God. great exploits, not our exploits, God's exploits through us. In Matthew, this whole issue of knowing is just so important to God. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 20 to 23, there are those that said, well, Lord, you know, we did all these amazing things in your name. And he would turn around and say, well, I never knew you. I was never really intimate with you. Sure, you might have done all this stuff, but we never had intimacy. You and I didn't really know one another because the fruit of your life didn't evidence a deepness. He's not interested in the externals in the show. He's interested in the internals. He's interested in what's going on here with us. In Matthew 9, 12 and Matthew 12, 7, he says something. He's addressing the Pharisees and he says, but go and learn what it means that I want mercy, not sacrifice. But if you had known what it means, I desire mercy and sacrifice. See, because they had all the externals right. They looked good. They had the right outfit. They had the right curls, they had the right hats, they had everything, the right speech. Everything seemed so perfect, but internally they hadn't apprehended the heart of God because they weren't in the deep with him. So how do they go and learn? He says, well, go back and learn where I said that. In Hosea 6, verse 6, they would have found a mirror reflection of themselves because Hosea, when he preached his message, was talking to the people who were self-righteous, had all the externals happening, but were internally corrupt. God is so hungry that our heart is given over to him. God is so hungry that we are actually intimate and deep in relationship with him. That it's not about saying the right thing and knowing 100 verses off by heart. It's about coming into the deep. The fruit of our relationship is evidenced in our lives. So that our immediate response when we come up to something is, well, what would Jesus do? See, we coin that phrase and half the time we're not really sure what Jesus would do because we're not in the Word long enough to know what he would do. And this was the problem with the Pharisees. They could recite it. They could know it. Intellectually, they could ascend to it. But their heart was far removed from it. Because if they were like that, they would love whom Jesus loved. They would show mercy instead of asking for religion. That's the kind of difference it would make in their lives. Matthew 11, 28. I've used the Message Bible for this because I just love this passage in the Message. It says there, are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burnt out on religion? Are you burnt out on the externals? Are you like the guy in the desert lifting these incredible boulders just all on your own? Are you tired and worn out? And he tells us, come to me, come away with me. Come away from all that stuff that you're trying to do and come into the deep with me. Set aside time, come and be with me. Come with me and I'll recover your life. I'll show you what true rest is like. Sometimes we get so busy with stuff and we're all busy people, absolutely all of us. But stuff gets in the way of our getting into the deep with God. We have this ritual in our house, and you can call it a ritual, but it's what we do. When I get up in the morning, I have my place in the house. You don't want to speak to me before I get to my place. I've got to be in my place. Martin has his place, and that's where we spend time just hanging out with God. Just hanging out. Well, my place is near my computer, and I found myself after a time, because my ministry mainly revolves around communicating with students via email. They study online, and they study via CD, so my objective is always to deal with any problems, to make sure that they're connected, to pastor them in their situation so they don't feel isolated and all that. So this time that I'd set aside in the morning started to become a time where I started doing stuff. And the first thing I found myself doing, instead of going to my place, I turn on the internet, which is near the kettle, and then I'd go into my computer room and I turn on the computer. And I had all good intentions and I'd have my breakfast and I thought, I'll just check to see who's... And, of course, there's always someone emailing you. And then it went from there to checking out the news. Well, what's going on in the world today? Got to be up to date. It's really important. And all of a sudden, all this stuff, ministry stuff, which is good stuff, it's what I'm called to do, started to crowd out my time with God to the point where it was non-existent. I would just come in and I would just sit down and started doing that, and that's what I was doing. Well, you know, you can run a car on a tank for only so far. And it's spiritual suicide not to spend time in God's presence. And that sounds very intense, but it is. It is spiritual suicide. You can only go for so long. And so I found myself becoming very dry and very like, oh, if I see one more paper, oh, I'm just going to scream, you know. Ministry started to become a chore. Everything started to become a chore. And then I came to realization when I watched a minister on TV that I had realized that I had just slipped into this pattern, and it went for months, absolute months, probably 4 or 5 months. How does that happen? Just bit by bit by bit until you realize that you're just running on empty. And I had to start taking aggressive hold of my time, and I forbid myself from turning on that internet, and I forbid myself from turning on the computer. It can wait 10 minutes. It can wait half an hour. There's nothing so pressing and so urgent that it should bite into my time. Because I remember Olivia, when she came back from a missions trip, and Justin repeated it this morning, said that if I don't get what I need from God first, how can I give that to other people? If I can't get peace from God first, how can I minister peace to other people? It's not possible. You'll do it for a while, but after a while you run on that empty tank. And so I had to become quite aggressive about getting that time back. He then says, walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Jesus spent time alone. If the Son of God needed time alone with his Father, hello, we need that time as well. We need to be passionate about that time. He never made an important decision before he spent time with the Father to get direction. He got to a point where he would say, I don't do or say anything that I don't see my Father say and do. Wow. That's huge. That's absolutely huge. To be so Spirit-led. Can you imagine a life like that? Awesome. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. See, Psalms says in Psalms 91, it's God's heartbeat to come to our rescue. It's God's heartbeat to lift us up. That's the heartbeat of God. Grace is not something he stresses about having to give us. He doesn't think, oh, Miss Astrid, she's coming again. Oh, no. You know, he loves to see us come. He loves to put our burdens, see us put our burdens upon him. Because he says he's the one that's better able to help us in whatever situation we find ourselves in. So he invites us. It's the unforced rhythms of grace. It's beautiful. He's not forcing himself. He says there that I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting upon you. I'll just flick up that next slide. See, we often think that we've got a handle on and we know what suits us. And we might think that we have to copy this person's ministry and this person's style of doing things. And we all, you know, look at people and try to draw things from different people. But God's got a style and a call unique for ourselves. But the problem is we don't spend time long enough with God to find out what that is and to develop that with him, because we become impatient and we want things yesterday. So he invites us. He invites us to keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. You'll learn how that my ways are refreshing. You'll think that they're definitely different from your ways, but they are refreshing because they're a better fit for you. They're your fit. That's where I want you to be. And why can he promise such a thing? He says, because in Jeremiah, he says that I knew you before you were even formed. He says in Jeremiah 29, he says, I have got plans for you to prosper you, to give you a future, to give you a life and a hope, to give you eternity with me. There is no place in this world that you'll get a better deal than that. Absolutely no place in this world. I want to tell you quickly, have I got time? Have I got time to tell a quick story? You're still here? Well, I can see you're still here, but you're still here. You mentally left the building. I want to tell you about one of my students, just very quickly. I have a student that studies via CD. And I got a letter from him the other day. And he just said, thank you for the Friday night emails, encouraging him and so forth. Well, he's about 50, from what I can gather. And up to 3 years ago, he couldn't read or write. So he's probably been saved around about 8 years, I would think. But he had it on his heart to start writing stories and to start writing teachings and things like that, poetry and all this kind of stuff. And he hadn't even done year 12. So he had to go and do year 12. And he went to his mate and said, well, what do you think? How do you think I'm going to go? He says, not a hope. So he goes to his room and he gets down on his knees and says, God, just I can't do this without you. Just give me a pass. He goes in, he gets a pass. Anyway, cut a long story short, he's now in his 50s, only just learned how to use a computer, only just learned how to put on a CD, and I kid you not, and he's doing a BA in Biblical Studies. And he says, I can do it if you're with me, God. Now, that doesn't sound terribly exciting. You might think, oh, well, big deal. But this guy is 8 years into a life sentence in a prison cell. And now we can see that there is no place that God can't reach you. There is nothing that God can't do in your life. The grace of God is above and beyond our circumstances. And this one point, I'll just read it very quickly, because he just says it so beautifully. He says, I'm not allowed on the internet. I have no one who can explain these things to me. So, Hastrid, I hope that I'm allowed to ask you these things, knowing how witty God is. I want to be careful about what I say, but I tell you what, mate. He's a bit confused about my name as well. I couldn't be any more disadvantaged than I am. But that's okay, because we worship the God of the impossible. Praise Jesus. Thank you for your time. And he goes on just before that and he says, I realise now this has been God's plan all along. He's just been rescued out of this situation of hopelessness where he's going to spend the rest of his life. There's no option for parole. This is it. This is where he's at. But God has reached into that circumstance and totally turned it around, because he has a plan that even in the midst of the chaos will turn out to be something awesome. That is just amazing. Revelation 3:20 says, look, I stand at the door, hear me call, open up the door and let me in. He's talking to a people who had been in the deep, but now were sitting on the edge. They're dangling their feet on the edge because they've cooled off. And I believe the challenge that God wants to throw out to us tonight is, will you hang out with me? Will you come into the deep with me? Just flick on the next one. Cheers. Will you come into the deep with me? Will you hang out with me? Don't just eat and run, but hang out. Have supper with me. Come into the deep. You've sat on the edge long enough. You've been influenced by your peers long enough. You've tried to keep the peace. The compromise isn't working. Come into the deep with me. Take the plunge. It's time to be the leader that God has called you to be. To be the minister to the people in your workplaces. To be the minister to the people in your schools. To be the people in minister to wherever you are that God has planted you to be. Jump in and come and find refreshment for your soul. Because that's where I am. That's where you'll get refreshment. That's where the joy will come. That's where my spirit is. That's where I will roll over you. This is where I will anoint you. This is where I will give you strength to face whatever it is that you're facing. This is where I will empower you. That's the challenge that God holds us today. That's what he's calling us to do. So that's what I believe God is challenging us to do, to come into the deep with him, to make a decision today, to not sit on the edge anymore, dangling our toes on the edge, but say, no, I want to come into the deep. And then when we go away, not saying, well, that was a really good heartfelt service, I really enjoyed that, and then forgetting, because we don't want to do that. Because the definition of insanity is to expect something different while still doing the same thing. And God wants us to do something different. He wants to change our lives. He wants us to be people of influence and power wherever we have been placed. He wants us to be victorious, devoted, and passionate people for God. Amen? Amen.